Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke.
Oh, God, I hate Shakespeare. That's right, I said it.
No.
I do, I hate Shakespeare.
Why?
I just don't get it, how a mediocre actor from a measly little town is suddenly the brightest jewel in England's royal crown. Oh, God, I hate Shakespeare. His plays are wordy, but oh no, the great Shakespeare.
Nominated for 10 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Something Rotten tells the story of playwright brothers Nick and Nigel Bottom, played by Brian D'Arcy James and John Cariani, who live in the shadow of that Renaissance rock star known as The Bard. Christian Borle as a strutty Shakespeare who renders everyone he encounters utterly starstruck.
But he's brilliant, what majesty flows from his pen. His poetry soars like a sweet violin. God's own inspiration, like lightning doth strike him. And he captures my soul.
Ah, jeez, you sound just like him.
Really? Thanks.
In his effort to overshadow Shakespeare, Nick Bottom, again Brian D'Arcy James, seeks out a soothsayer who foretells that the future of theater involves singing, dancing, and acting at the same time. Nick and Nigel then set out to write the world's very first musical. John Cariani is a playwright and actor who has worked often in our region and, for me, really steals Something Rotten with his endearing nerdiness. His character Nigel is a sincere, sweet Shakespeare fanboy.
You should hate Shakespeare.
Well, I don't. I try to emulate Shakespeare.
Well, there's your problem. You're so blinded by the bard who's such a pompous little man.
Why is it a problem to admit that I'm a fan?
Because he's a hack with a knack for stealing anything he can. How can you say that?
John Cariani joins us now.
Thank you.
The show is hilarious.
Thank you.
And you're hilarious in it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. How did you first learn about the project? When did it get on your radar?
I think in early 2013, I got a call to ask if I wanted to participate in a reading of a new musical. They explained what it was about, and I met with Phil Reno, who's our music director, to kind of learn a bunch of the music that Wayne and Carrie Kirkpatrick, who are our Carrie's our book writer and also our lyricist and composer, and his brother Wayne is also the composer. Casey Nicola, the director, I guess, contacted me. I had done a play with him, a show with him called Minsky's in 2009 that was done at the Amundsen in Los Angeles, and it didn't quite make it to Broadway. And that was super disappointing, but I'm very excited that I got, because of that job, I got asked to do this. And I read the script and loved it because the part I play is Nigel Bottom, who's an uncertain playwright, and I'm an uncertain playwright. I read it for the guys, and we were just in a small room, and they read it with a bunch of luminaries from the Broadway stage, and the guys said that I was Nigel, and I got to stick with it until now we've opened.
You're so good in it. Like, every line you deliver, you're so, like, humble and nervous and winning, and I'm just rooting for you the entire time. You're also a huge Shakespeare fanboy in the show.
Yeah, I started the bulk of my career early on in the late 90s was the Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival. I was a company member there, and I did As You Like It, Twelfth Night, The Winner's Tale, are the three that I remember the most. A bunch of others I can't remember now. But yeah, I'm a huge fan, but I'm also a huge critic because a lot of his plays aren't good, and people need to admit that, because dramaturgically a lot of his plays are really bad because they're cobbled together. And people need to admit that a little bit, I think, because the good ones are fantastic and some of the bad ones are really bad, and we need to admit that. I think it's healthy.
Do you think that they are cobbled together from him stealing pieces from lesser playwrights in London, which is, of course, what he does in Something Rotten?
I don't know. I've always just known that tonally you can tell that plays like Macbeth, Othello, Julius Caesar, Twelfth Night, the good ones, they hold together so beautifully. The Tempest, I think, is another one. I think Much Ado is another one. As You Like It. They just hold together so beautifully. And then you get to plays like King John and Two Gentlemen of Verona, and some of those are just, they're just much trickier, and they don't feel like they were put together by the same person almost. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Troilus and Cressida is another one that's really difficult. I think you need really good auteur directors to put those pieces together.
Then it's back to my room where I resume my attempt to write a hit. Just me and my beer and the terrible fear that I might be losing it. And it's hard.
It's really, really hard. So very, very hard.
But honey, believe me, it's hard.
It's hard.
It's hard.
It's hard.
It's so incredibly hard. So inconceivably, unbelievably hard. It's hard to be the bard.
You said you're an uncertain playwright, but you're a fairly successful playwright. Why are you still uncertain?
I wrote a play called Almost Maine, which has become very popular of late, but I wrote it a long, long time ago, and it wasn't received very well when it first came out. So that'll do a number on your confidence. Okay. And, you know, it played off Broadway in 2006. It premiered at Portland Stage Company in Portland, Maine in 2004, and then opened off Broadway in 2006 to little acclaim. And then over the past decade, it's become one of the most popular plays in the world.
It's very often put on by regional theater companies. A friend of mine directed it in the Adirondacks, actually, and that's when I first saw it. As an actor and a playwright, how does your writing inform your acting and vice versa, if at all?
Well, I just approach everything, writing and acting, from the point of view of story, and that's where you'll always find your success. And we're very fortunate with Something Rotten, and that it's one of the best books of a musical I've ever encountered, in that it does exactly what it sets out to do. It doesn't go beyond what it sets out to do, which is a big problem, I think, in most theater and most musicals. People try to punch too many ideas into their story, stuff it with platitudes and philosophy that doesn't need to be there. And these writers are so smart. They come from the animated movie world. And I don't know if you know much about animated movies, but right now they're the best screenplays being written because they have to be perfectly developed because it costs so much to reanimate dialogue. You know what I mean? That's my understanding. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I think the guys told me. And they also come from the pop music world, and I think pop music is underestimated. Broadway used to be pop, and I think these guys have written some songs that might catch on a little bit.
There is, it's so funny, and it's really densely funny. There's laugh after laugh after laugh after laugh, and then opportunities to hold for a long time, very, like, aware to hold for the laugh, to hold for the applause. How are those beats developed before the audience is there, or do they really come together after you start previews?
They only come together once the audience is present, and it's different every night. That's the most fun part. Like, I get to read a poem to my beloved, and it's kind of, I don't know how would you describe reading the poem? I mean, I don't know how to
Well, it's like, it's like the reading of the poem stands in for a sex act.
Yes, 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 a very innocent. It's just simply a reading of the poem, and it becomes a sex act, and it's very interesting to hear audiences catch on to what's going on, and we can definitely tell when younger audiences are present and when older audiences are present because the laughs are very different.
I'm sure. Because it starts to expand upon it a little without hopefully ruining the moment for anybody. It starts too fast. Mm-hmm. You take some time with it, yeah. But then you're disappointed with the ending. But it's your first time reading a poem to a girl.
Yes, exactly.
It's so, so good. It works so well.
Doing something to me, Mr. Poetry Man. Oh, forgive me. I never get to discuss poems in this way.
Oh, it's okay. I just never knew that poetry could affect someone the way it affects me.
Me neither.
It's the end all, the be all. Oh, you ought to see all the books that I have on my shelf.
Me too. I find pleasure perusing those writings and musing. So often I pleasure myself. Wait, that didn't sound right.
No, I know what you mean. When I'm deep in the throes of impassionate prose, I could scream.
You scream?
Yeah.
So do I. Ah! Oh, I love a lilting line of lyrical alliteration.
Who doesn't love alliteration?
And then I'm like, well, when the phrases come together like a consummation.
It's I love the places that words let me go. I love the way that your words move me so. I love that you feel the same way I do. And I love, you know that I love, you know that I love.
Me too.
Our guest is John Cariani, one of the stars of the 10-time Tony-nominated new musical, Something Rotten, which is running at the St. James Theater in New York City.
I've never been in anything that gets an ovation in the middle of the first act and another ovation, a couple of ovations in the second act, and sometimes even standing ovations mid-show. And also, I've never been in anything that... It is relentlessly funny, and you can feel the audience getting smacked around by joke after joke after joke, and they get giddy after a while. And one of my friends said that he felt like he did something when he watched it. It was so much fun that he felt like he had done something because he laughed so hard and had such a good time, and I think that's a great way to put it. And also, it's a love letter to the people in the theater, to people who love Shakespeare, to people who love musical theater, and it also has a great storyline that has nothing to do with theater. Do you know what I mean? Like, I get to be the guy who tries to get my brother to do the right thing, and that's a universal story that has nothing to do with the theater at all, you know?
It also, it's a love letter to people who love theater and musicals, but also a send-up and mockery, good-natured, mm-hmm. hilariously. How can it be both? How can it be a love letter and the send-up?
Because Casey Nicolau, the director, did not allow us to be mean. It was a very fine line between edgy humor, barbs, sarcasm. Nothing could be mean. In fact, there's very little sarcasm in the play, actually. It's he didn't allow anything to be mean. Even when my brother and I fight, it's out of pain, mm-hmm. not anger. Yeah. And he kept working with us on that. Brian Darcy James plays my brother, and it's, let me tell you, it's a pretty great treat to get to play the little brother to Brian Darcy James, because he's one of the finest we have. And such a smart guy, and such a generous guy, and such a great actor first. You know, he's an actor and a star, which is a nice combination.
You and Brian Darcy James and Christian Bohr all seem so at home on stage. Like they're big characters with like a lot to do, but you're so comfortable, it seems. It appears from the audience. How do you get there with everybody? Why everybody's so comfortable in their own skin and in their characters on stage?
Because these parts were written for us, and that doesn't always happen. I mean, with a revival, you're fitting into an old piece, an old performance even. Here, we got to voice our concerns, our opinions. We got to express express dissatisfaction with scenes. I've never been in a process like this, but all through previews, things changed every day. For Brian probably got 20 to 30 new pages every single day, right. For the whole preview process. I didn't get changes until the end of the first week, and they started to come fast and furious for me, too. And fortunately, watching him handle it with grace helped me handle it with grace. Watching Christian handle it with grace, I was like, these guys are handling it with grace. You got to figure out how to handle this with grace. But it was so great because the writers were very curious as to what we needed to make this work. And they were a slave to, they said really interesting things. Carrie and Wayne Kirkpatrick and John O'Farrell wrote the book with Carrie Kirkpatrick. They were very committed to the time it took to tell the story. And I think that's where they succeeded wildly, because silliness, it's a silly play, and silliness can only last for so long, and this play does not outwear its welcome, and I think that's the smartest thing you can do with a comedy.
Brian Darcy James was also doing a show off-Broadway for part or most of the rehearsal process. Did you get to see him in that show?
Yeah, I got to see, we had a Saturday rehearsal where I wasn't called, and Christian Borle had an extra ticket and was holding it for me just in case I could go, and I got to see Brian play King George. I'm telling you, man, the guy has given two seminal performances and one in this what do you call it, this spring, this winter and spring.
This season. Because yeah. I saw Hamilton, too, and I bought tickets in July to see it in February. Mm-hmm. I know I mentioned to you before, I saw Something Rotten with my boyfriend last night. We also saw Hamilton together, and he was like, I want to see that guy do more. And I was like, you happen to be in a very unique position to be able to see him do more very soon.
Yeah, and it was a difficult decision for him to make because Something Rotten was a sure thing, great role and a sure thing, and Hamilton was only at the Public at the time. It was only going to be at the Public, and so he didn't know where it was going to go from there. I'm so happy that he stayed with us.
Yeah.
I'm sad for Hamilton, but I'm happy for us.
I think it seems like they're okay. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, it would have been great with her, but they're doing all right. So how does when you're doing 8 shows a week now, you are right now, obviously, in Something Rotten, do you still write now, or are you focusing on performing and trying to have some free time and relaxation during your day?
Well, we have a lot of Tony events going on right now, and that's going to take up a lot of our free-ish time. I actually have a new play I have 3 new plays that have just been published. One is just about to be released by Dramatis Play Service, and my newest play is called Lovesick, and it's kind of a darker cousin to Almost Maine, and it's just been, we just signed the contract, so it's just been picked up for publication. So I'm looking over the manuscript right now, making sure it's all good, and hopefully that'll be out by the end of the year.
Why did Almost Maine need a darker cousin for you?
Because I got older. I mean, I wrote Almost Maine when I was young. I was only 27 when I wrote it, and it's popular now, you know what I mean, which is very strange. Mm-hmm. And now I've been through a little bit more, and I've seen the funny, sad side of love. So that's what Lovesick is.
The last time you were on the Roundtable, you were speaking with Joe Donahue about Dancing Lessons, a Mark St. Germain show that was at Barrington Stage last summer. You co-starred with Paige Davis. You've done a lot of Berkshire Theatre and Regional Theatre. You mentioned Hudson Valley Shakespeare. Why do you think regional theatre is important?
It's my favorite place to work because I think it's truly where new work lives in this country right now. I mean, new work lives in New York. The new work you hear about lives in New York. At the not-for-profit level, like Second Stage, like Manhattan Theater Club, Atlantic Theater Company, MCC, all of those places. But the regional theaters have really taken it upon themselves to promote and produce new work. Where I think they're finding their most success is promoting and producing new work that is specific to the region in which the theater exists. Portland Stage Company is committed to me as a playwright because I primarily write about Maine, and not just coastal Maine, not the Maine that people know. I'm from northern Maine, and it's a very different Maine, and it's a part of the country that is ignored culturally. And so I think that's very important. I know the Indiana Rep has, I don't remember his name, but they have a playwright who is sort of in residence, and he writes about matters Indianan. You know what I mean? And I think that's really important to remember that we are all very different. This is a big country, and people are we're all different. And we have different views and different lives, and that's a good thing.
How did a career in theater find you in northern Maine?
When you grew up I grew up in a small town in northern Maine that is far away from any other big city. It's not like, you know, some people grow up in a small town, but it's an hour away from Oklahoma City or something. This was like a town that was pretty big. It was 9,000 people, but our closest big city was like Quebec City, which is like 3.5 hours to the west. You had to go up into Canada and over, and there were big towns in New Brunswick. The closest big town in Maine was 30,000 people in Bangor, Maine. So we were pretty isolated, and our school was everything. School and church is everything in towns like that. That's what keeps people going. And the schools are great. I got to go to Amherst College coming out of Prescott Isle High School, and I was pretty well prepared for it. You know what I mean? And the next year, a girl went to Harvard. Like, we always sent people away to great schools, and people always wondered how that was possible. It's because everyone was committed to the school. Everyone, you know? And there was no alternative. You couldn't send your kids to another school if the school was failing. Everybody sent their kids to that school, and everybody cared about it. We had a great music program. We had a great theater program, great sports programs. And fortunately, I did a lot of music and a few plays in high school, and I was lucky that I found out that I loved it then. Wasn't sure I was going to do it. I thought I'd be a teacher after college, but then slowly gained the confidence and gave it a shot later on.
And it's so lucky for you, but also for audiences to get to see your writing and see your performances.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, absolutely.
John Cariani plays Nigel Bottom in Something Rotten. The new musical is nominated for 10 Tony Awards and is running at the St. James Theater on Broadway in New York City.
You asked me to write something? Well, here it is.
Short as the day follows the night, short as the sky turns to blue. This much I know, this much is true. Above all else in whatever you do, to thine own self.
The original Broadway cast album for Something Rotten will be released on Ghostlight Records, digitally on June 2nd, and on CD July 17th. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.